Chris, what is the name of the report that's just being released by the Alberta Biodiversity Monitoring Institute?
This report is titled Climate Change Vulnerability of Alberta's Terrestrial Biodiversity, a Preliminary Assessment.
And is this part of a series of projects?
Yeah, this is part of the Biodiversity Management and Climate Change Adaptation Project that the Alberta Biodiversity Monitoring Institute is involved with. And we partner up with the University of Alberta. Between many academics and ABMI staff, we're putting out a variety of reports. The previous one was put out by Rick Schneider on the changes in the natural subregions of Alberta, and this is sort of the second large report that comes out. The university people are publishing in the academic press.
And I understand that there's also funding from the CCEMC?
Yeah, this is funded by the Climate Change and Emissions Management Corporation.
So in this particular report, what is the question that you're addressing?
What my co-author, Amy Nixon, and I wanted to do was to get really a broad overview of a wide swath of Alberta biodiversity and sort of get an idea of which species groups are most likely to be affected by climate change, either positively or negatively.
And which species did you look at? Did you take kind of a blanket look?
Well, we looked at 173 species of mammals, birds, amphibians, reptiles, and vascular plants, oh, and insects as well. And what we tried to do was cover all the reptiles and amphibians, because there are very few species in Alberta. In terms of many of the birds and mammals and plants, we tried to cover those which were of management interest and ones which we thought may or may not be affected by climate change.
And so I understand that the way you approached this is that you asked two questions of each species. What were those questions?
Well, we asked, as you say, two questions. And in the context of a tool that we used called the Climate Change Vulnerability Index, and this tool uses, as you say, two inputs. And one of them is exposure to future climate in the year 2050. So how much the temperature and the available moisture of a species is likely to change over the next 40 years or so. And the second component is the species traits, the species evolved aspects, which will determine how they respond to climate change, things like their requirement for specific temperatures or moisture or how broad their diet is and things like that. So we combine those two aspects into this tool.
And then what does that tell you?
Well, what we derive at the end is a numerical score, which is called the Vulnerability Index. And this numerical score allows us to compare very, very different species, you know, mammals and insects, in a reasonably consistent manner, and to come out with a Vulnerability Index score, which allows us to compare them to get a general idea of which species are more likely to be affected by climate change.
With the previous report that Dr. Rick Schneider did, he was looking at how climate change might progress, so the changes in the landscape, and then also kind of the range a variability if there's a little bit of climate change or a lot of climate change in the sense. So how did you take that and incorporate into what you were looking at with the species and how they would react to climate change, because you've got this whole range of what might or might not happen?
What we did was we took what climate models called an ensemble approach, which is basically an average of 15 of the better climate change models out there. And we predicted climate change in the year 2050 based on that ensemble value. But then we also took and looked at five specific climate change models, which basically cover the gamut from warm, dry to cold, wet. And we saw how much effect that would have on that vulnerability index. And really what we found was for four of those five models, it really had no difference whatsoever. So the climate change vulnerability index is kind of robust to the differences that we see in the different climate models. The one model, which is much warmer and much drier, really did seem to have an effect. and some species had a very different vulnerability index using that particular model.
So describe what that change might be.
Well, it would be much warmer and much drier. The entire province, according to this model, would be in the extreme category of temperature change that we have. Whereas the other models, it varies. For example, the mountains are not expected to change very much under most climate change models, but under this extreme one, it gets into the most severe category.
How would it affect the species, and does it affect the majority of species or just certain ones?
Yeah, it depends on the species traits, as I mentioned before. Those species that are not affected by temperature so much, that like warm temperatures, are not so much affected, whereas those species, for example, that require moisture, ponds, rivers, lakes, which might be expected to dry up in the future, are going to be more affected.
Can you give me an example?
I guess a major example is the difference between amphibians and reptiles. Amphibians require standing water or slow streams to breed in, to lay their eggs in. And because they have porous skin, they, for much of their life cycle, they require somewhat moist habitats. Whereas reptiles have a dry, scaly skin and lay their eggs on land and are much less affected by temperature and aridity, dryness.
Does that mean that certain species would actually disappear?
It's possible, yeah.
So who are we looking at? Is this toads and frogs?
Well, there's two ways they can disappear. One of them is that they're just unable to adapt or move and just die out. And the other way that they might disappear is to just move out of the province, to move up into the Northwest Territories, to follow this climate envelope, the suitable temperatures and moisture as it moves north. And so they may do fine globally, but they may disappear from Alberta. And that depends on their ability to move, whether there are barriers to movement, and whether suitable habitat is available along their migration route.
So animals that can pick up and leave would stand a much better chance than those that can't, that are more dependent on specific areas, or they just can't get up and move.
Yeah, and what we found was that birds and mammals are least vulnerable to climate change of the groups we looked at, largely because they can pick up and move. Whereas plants, many of them don't disperse very far every generation. They have heavy seeds which fall and may roll a couple of centimeters, but their ability to move quickly in response to climate change is much less. The one aspect that our analysis did not cover is whether suitable habitat will be available for the animals to actually move into if they are able to move. If they're able to move but there's no suitable habitat, if the ecological conditions are not suitable for them, then they're going to be in trouble. And that's very hard to predict. And that's really where Rick Schneider's study intersects with this study, in that he begins to predict which kind of natural region conditions are going to exist in the future in certain locations in Alberta.
So having done this study and developing this vulnerability index, when you stand back and take in the big picture, what is it that you're seeing?
Well, we can draw a number of conclusions. One of them is that amphibians are the group that are most at risk from climate change. Birds and mammals are less because of that ability to move. The other thing is that, particularly in the southeastern part of the province, the barriers to movement, which are put up by the large expanse of crops, the many roads, the urbanization, they are going to pose a barrier to dispersal of some of those southeastern species. And we really have to think about how we're going to overcome that to allow them to move.
I suppose to be a devil's advocate here, what difference does it really make? Do we really need these species?
Well, I guess it depends on your perspective. I think we are certain to lose some species in Alberta, and I think in some cases it may be inevitable. There may be nothing we can do to stop that. In other cases, we're going to have to really look carefully at what we can do and what we should do to try to preserve these species. As to why we need these species, I mean, it's a well-known fact that ecosystems with more species that have evolved together are more robust and more resilient to change.
What is the next step, do you think, from this report?
Well, I think the next step is to look at some particular species in much more detail. This was kind of an overview, a comparison of a broad number of species, and now we need to look at some species with particular management concerns and look at it in much more detail and try to combine the species characteristics with a prediction of whether they will actually have climate to move into in the future.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Okay, thank you.